are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
I got a stupid MLB alert. JD Martinez is the first player to win Player of the Week awards 4 times.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
He's like the endorsement king over there, I suppose. I say over there like an American idiot. He's, you know, an endorsement king in Japan. I think he's going to make that money back regardless.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I think the Marlins want someone to take the entire contract and give up their top prospects, which would be fine for me as a Giants fan because the Giants' top prospects, play in, like, Little League right now.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Matt Thompson. Matt, how you doing?
Pretty good. A little late night version of the podcast for the people. Baseball season winding down, playing for the championship in my main head-to-head Yahoo League that I play in with my longtime league going on like year 8 or 9 or something like that. Play for the championship, so hopefully I can pull that out, win some cash.
Well, I wish you luck. How many leagues were you in this year?
6.
And how many championships are you competing for?
2.
That's not bad.
No, it's not bad, but normally it's better than that. But
yeah, I'm having kind of a down year in terms of championships. I'm in 13 leagues this year, and I'm gonna win 3 of them as long as I don't have an epic collapse in the barf league. And
yeah,
it is way closer than it should be.
Last week you told us it was down to like 6 points or so.
It was as low as 2 points yesterday.
What do you got? Everyone that's hurt?
No, I think part of it is a lot of other teams in the league haven't been paying attention, so the guy behind me has been able to kind of creep back in it a little bit. I don't think I'm going to have any problems winning, but like I said, a lot closer than it should be. Currently have a 3-point league. Just checked it right now.
Yeah, maybe you'll be able to show your face after all.
Yeah, it didn't help tonight that Dylan Buddy got crushed versus Boston.
Yeah, Baltimore Orioles starting pitching.
Yeah, that happens. But we are going to talk about some guys mostly kind of starting to look forward to next season. I mean, we'll talk a little bit about their 2017 remaining value for those of you in head-to-head playoffs or those of you in roto leagues playing down to the wire. But for the most part, I want to talk about guys that have maybe interesting ADPs or looks into next season. And let's start with JD Martinez. Now, JD Martinez hit his 40th home run yesterday, which, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's a great number. You know, maybe people are discounting it a tad bit due to the fact that power is up significantly. But considering he missed virtually the first month and a half of the season, has only played in 108 games, the fact that he's got to 40, and I want to say he has hit 20 or 19 since coming over to Arizona on August 1st. Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous. So here's my question to you, Matt. What are your thoughts on JD Martinez's season so far this year, and where do we put him for next year?
I got a stupid MLB alert. It was either this morning or yesterday. JD Martinez is the first player to win Player of the Week awards 4 times in a season. Which is not really meaningful, but it just shows you, I mean, he's been doing this all year since he came back. He's pretty much destroyed the baseball. 297, 374, 679, like you said, 40 home runs. The midseason trade, he's on a tear ever since he jumped over to Arizona. And he's a guy that we did our first-round mock last year, last week on the show. He's not a guy in consideration for me for the first round, but I was looking at my rankings and like I think he might squeeze in the about the 30th overall range, because he's a guy I like. I think if he wasn't a free agent and I knew he was going to stick in Arizona next year, I would have him ahead of like Stanton. But I put him behind Stanton in my very, very early ranks. I put him on Twitter. I don't know if you saw it. I have JD Martinez as my sixth outfielder, ahead of Aaron Judge. And right behind Stanton. But if I knew Martinez was going to re-sign in Arizona, I'd bump him ahead of Stanton and put him right behind Trout, Blackman, Betts, and Harper. I mean, he's been that great.
Yeah, I haven't done my ranks yet, though. We're going to start doing some mock drafts here in a little bit. Actually, probably get the first one rolling up tomorrow.
Can't wait for that.
So some industry league guys. Let's see. I'll give a little. I won't give away all the names, because there's going to be at least three or four of these industry mock drafts with different people in each one. But the one going tomorrow, Dan Strafford, friend of the podcast, Walter Kubiski, friend of the podcast, Doug Dennis, friend of the podcast, one of the guys from Fighting Chance, Al Melchior, Andrew Pertua. Paul Martin, Fantasy Keith, who's Keith Farnsworth, friend of the podcast, new FWFB writer, Ray Kuhn, you, Ryan Bloomfield, friend of the podcast, new personality, writer and podcaster, Donnie Miller, a guy named at Bat Flip Crazy, who I have no idea who he is, but he reached out to me, and he's new in the industry, and he asked for a shot and given him one, and then Greg Jewett, friend of the podcast. So in that one, and then we're going to have at least two more, maybe three more, depending on how many more industry guys are getting. So I'm interested to see where a guy like JD Martinez goes, because I think he is firming himself as a second rounder. And I agree. Yeah. If I knew where he was going, I'd be more concrete on where. If I knew he was in Arizona, I'd say he's probably close to a top 20 pick to me.
Agreed. Yeah. No, I think you're absolutely right. And I'm excited for this. Nobody does preseason mock drafts better than we do out here. I mean, not to humble brag or anything, but we do. We got on top of that last year with a bunch of them.
Yeah, this is the third year in a row we've done preseason mocks this early.
It was nice, because we kind of set the tone on Trey Turner's value. Remember, we were a little bit behind on that. Trey Turner, we had him in the second round, I think, in all of our mocks, and he ended up being, we had him like around pick like 30 or so last year. He ended up going a little bit higher than that as the offseason progressed. But we can get ahead of the trends here and get enough of these samples here to get a pretty nice ADP amongst all industry folk, which is very, very nice.
Yeah, and I mean, it's real interesting to kind of do some of these early season mocks, because it gives you a real idea of where the
industry is. Not just where Joe Schmo thinks somebody is, yeah. where the inside guys think people
and,
are.
And the industry really tends to set ADPs. So, I mean, I think it's kind of, it's pretty important to kind of see where these guys land, because this will kind of give us a better clue of where the ADPs are going to be in a couple months when people actually start doing drafts. And then there are some people that, crazy enough, start doing drafts next month. So
yeah, I can't imagine. I've never been in a league like that. Like, you ended up doing the actual real drafts in a month. I feel like that's...
Well, we just did the 3-sport draft, and we've done Dynasty League drafts this early before. I warn people not to do these.
They're incredibly frustrating. We were trying, not that you need, I mean, I don't really rely on, you know, rankings to look at, but you'd always, when you're not at home and you need to look up, you know, what players are available and you don't want to forget about somebody, it's really, really difficult to pull up 2018 baseball rankings right now.
Mm-hmm.
Especially a month ago when we were doing that draft. So, and especially for stuff that doesn't count right now, and you got to wait till April of next year. So it was hard, but, you know, you got to use what you can, go off a lot of knowledge. And I don't know, I put up that top 20 of each position. I kind of like it. It's a nice baseline. Can build off that and make some changes. I've already kind of swapped a few things around, but setting a good base for this early in the offseason is it's still a 2017 season. Setting a nice base this early on is very, very nice. And, you know, players will rise and fall all offseason, and there'll be a nice situation to monitor certain guys like a Trey. Who's going to be this year's Trey Turner? That the ADP for the industry is a little bit lower, and then when it gets toward opening day, it's a little bit higher. You know, wonder who that's going to be this year. Jake Lamb's my prediction for that.
Well, that's not a bad one. I was going to go with more of a newer guy like a Rhys Hoskins.
Mm-hmm.
I think originally people are going to start putting him in the third, fourth round, but I bet you by the time, you know, February rolls around, there are going to be people starting to put him in the first round, which I think is crazy, but I mean, I understand why people will.
I had Hoskins as my number 9 first baseman in my little quick run.
I think you're going to be extremely low.
Yeah, and I'm fine with that. I'd much rather have Edwin Encarnacion next year.
Mm-hmm.
I'd much rather have Jose Abreu, I think, and I'd much rather have Bellinger. Hoskins might go in front of all those guys except for Bellinger.
Yep.
It'll probably go Goldschmidt, Votto, Rizzo, Freeman, Bellinger, Hoskins is my guess.
Yeah, it sounds about right.
But I'm taking E5. I'm taking probably Hosmer if he ends up in a favorable spot. So a lot of wild cards.
I mean, and I love Hoskins, but I love the approach. I love the hit tool. I love the power, obviously. But I think people are going to go insane on him, which I get it. But at the same time, people aren't factoring in kind of the downside. And then something that happens, I think, with some of these guys who especially break out, out of nowhere in the second half. I was talking with Eno Saris and Paul Sporer on a recent Sleeper in the Bus episode, and they were going crazy over Luis Castillo, and I had to be like, hey, let's pump the brakes a little bit here.
Yeah, Castillo, the Marlins traded him twice. I mean, so there's a reason for that. The Marlins, they get a terrible rap as far as the prospects go, but when they come up, they're guys that they hold on to normally do produce, believe it. Like, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. They're not a high upside, but you look at, you know, a lot of their pitchers and some of their position players put up decent seasons. Justin Bohr's been he's been a useful player, and Brian Anderson, who they just called up, is going to be a decent major league player. Nothing flashy, but you can't sleep on what they do a little bit there. But I mean, I forget where I was. Oh, back to the Hoskins comment real quick before we run this show completely off the rails on just J.D. Martinez discussion. I was looking at the first baseman rankings, you know, because I think this is interesting, looking for next year. I think Hoskins is ultimately Edwin Encarnacion with a little more batting average upside. Do you agree? I think that's a reasonable ceiling to expect with more batting average upside.
Sure, I just don't know
that necessarily next year, but as we build on.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I don't know what the team in Philadelphia is going to look around him, so I think one of the reasons
might be bad for another year or two, but I think Philly's going to be pretty nice squad.
Yeah, long term, you're taking Hoskins and that upside, but I mean for 2018, I'm with you. You got to take E5 because, I mean, he's going to have the better chance to score more runs and hit more RBIs in that lineup.
I feel like nobody talks about E5 this year, but
he's doing an E5 type year.
If you had to guess, how many homers do you think he's got?
I'm going to guess he's got 35.
36.
Yeah,
yep.
So,
wrong with that.
The average is a little 42, bit down, but it's
42,
you know.
36, 34, 39, 42, and 36 this year for home run totals. I think that'll play.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, E5 is so steady and so kind of safe that, I mean, I understand there are going to be a ton of people taking Hoskins over him, but I'm going to take E5 every time and feel pretty happy about it.
Yep.
All right, let's move on to Luke Weaver. He's one of your boys. Talked about him, God, last season and all throughout the preseason when we did our prospect preview podcasts. And you've been hyping him as a guy who would emerge at some point, and he has emerged. And the thing he's done with it that's been so impressive, he's done it with a really nice strikeout rate, which isn't something I necessarily
expect. It's incredible,
ain't it? Yeah, I didn't expect he'd do it at the major league level. And while, of course, the peripheral numbers are a little bit worse, they're not so much worse than his ERA to project that he's going to have a huge regression right now. Are we looking at a guy who is actually kind of a fantasy number 2 in the making?
I think so. I would have never thought I had a Luke Weaver kind of pegged as just a mid-rotation guy, which is still solid. You know, you can't win a fantasy league without having a bunch of those guys on your roster. But I think Weaver might be a tick better than that. His 2016 cup of coffee in the major leagues was outstanding. I know the ERA is a 5.70, but I forget the exact numbers off the top of my head. But his last like three appearances, when he was getting worn down, never reached these high innings totals, he just got completely bombed, and the ERA went way up. But you know, last year, 9 games, 8 starts, 36 innings, K rate was 11.1 per nine. 10 games this year, 7 starts so far, just under 50 innings, 10.95 Ks per nine. So, I mean, the strikeouts have been there. He's lowered the walks a little bit. He's cut, and big thing for him, he gave up a lot of long balls last year. He's cut that down significantly, especially in the minor leagues. He's dominant in AAA this year, as he was last year in a brief appearance there, and AA last year. He's a guy that always, he outpitches his pitch grades, if you know, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. He's got the fastball, and watching him pitch, I've heard this analysis. I want to say it was from Eno and Paul. I'm sorry if it's not. But they were absolutely 100% with how low to the ground he gets. He's a little guy anyways. I say little, but the frame is little. He's probably about 6 foot, and he's a real skinny dude. Like, he's listed at 170. I think even that might be a little bit heavier than he actually is. But he's got that really low release rate, and it almost looks like the ball is rising up to hitters, and it completely messes with your angles. You don't see that too often, so it's going to be tough to struggle. And he's got velocity. Surprisingly, for a guy like that, he's averaging 93 on the fastball. I've seen him hit as high as 97, 98 this year, which is crazy from a guy with his size. But the big thing I want to touch on before we talk about Luke Weaver for an hour is the changeup is the best off-speed pitch. It's always his go-to pitch. But this year, the big knock on Weaver is he doesn't have a pitch to get righties out. You know, because the people downgraded the fastball, put it as average, and looked at the frame and didn't think it would get a tick higher than that. And then you look at the good changeup for the lefties, but for getting righties out, people normally need to rely on a good off-speed pitch, and he's developed that. I don't know if you've seen any innings of his this year. It's called a curveball, but it kind of, I think it's closer to a slider. Mm-hmm. The way it breaks, and the way he sets it up, he throws it in any count. It's a phenomenal pitch. He uses it a lot against lefties also, because that's how good it is.
You think it's a phenomenal pitch? Because I don't think it's a great pitch, but I'm glad he's showing something else.
No, I think it is. The way he uses it,
okay.
The way him and Molina use it, it's more than just a show-me third pitch. I like that he uses it to get ahead and straight. He throws it first pitch to a lot of guys sometimes, throws a little slider and gets a – I'm going to call it a slider. This is a curveball, but it's a hard curveball. And it doesn't, if you watch it, it doesn't break like a curve. But I like the pitch. The changeup is still the best off-speed pitch, but his fastball is an underrated pitch. If you look at his pitch grades, it's like 50s across the board. Obviously, I don't think that's correct. I think the fastball is a little higher than that when you factor in everything. And he's got that little cutter also, which he kind of shelved a little bit this year.
Yeah, the cutter's atrocious, and I'm glad he's
yeah,
it.
The cutter's not bad. And the cutter's not a good pitch. But yeah, this off-speed thing is different than that. And I like him a lot going forward. I have a hard time putting a value on him. I think he's guaranteed a rotation spot.
And I think the beauty of it is, in spite of the fact that he's pitched really well, I mean, he's got almost 50 innings of a sub-2 ERA ball with, you know, almost 11 strikeouts per nine. I don't think you're going to have to pay very much for him on draft day.
No, he's going to be a steal.
I think he's going to go barely maybe as like a top 60 pitcher. And I think he could be a top 40 guy next year.
Yeah.
So I think there's plenty of profit to be made on a guy like Luke Weaver.
He's had some injuries that have lowered the innings totals, but if you do some, you know, some research into those injuries, last year he missed time with a broken left wrist when he was shagging fly balls. It's like stupid stuff like that. So.
I think it was Doug Thorburn and Sammy Reed were talking about Zach Godley. I want to say it was Zach Godley. Could have been someone else. But Doug Thorburn said something that I've heard before within the industry within the scouting industry. But it's something I don't think we necessarily apply enough in fantasy, and we definitely probably should have applied it to Luke Weaver and didn't. Sometimes when a guy has every tool is either average or above average, The combination of that makes him a very good player because he has no weakness. And I think that's the thing we're seeing with Luke Weaver, with the added strikeout rates, with, you know, the fact that he's getting a, you know, he's getting on top of guys. His first pitch strike rate is up. His swinging strike rate is up. Almost all of his pitches are either average or above average. Now, there's no, like, dominating tool or dominating pitch, but he doesn't necessarily need one if there's no real glaring weakness in his game.
Yeah, I think his best aspect of his game is his command.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. But, I mean, like, I wouldn't – would you call it elite? It's not elite command.
No.
It's not like
no,
– he doesn't have, like, 70-grade command. It's, like, 60, 65-grade. Which
yeah,
is great, you know, yeah. Especially in this day and age. But it's not like he's pairing that with, you know, a 97-mile-an-hour fastball.
125 innings this year, he's only walked 30 guys between AAA and the majors.
And that's amazing. Like, those are the guys that often get overlooked in fantasy. And I think this is a guy that you and I are identifying as someone to target on draft day, great, you know, as long as the price is affordable, and I believe it will be. I think this mock draft will, you know, I will purposefully not draft Luke Weaver just
yep,
to see
me
where
too.
He goes.
100%. I'm going to let someone else steal the glory on that because I am very curious to see how he's going to go. It's hard with a fan of, you know, being a fan of that team also and watching him in the minor leagues a lot. It's hard to, I don't want to say push my biases aside because I do think ultimately I do a very good job of that when it comes to where I rank my players. Obviously, we joke around it about it here. Big Cardinal fan, big Giants fan, but I think we both properly rank, you know, guys like that. But I want to let someone else set the bar on Weaver, and I agree with you there. I know Mike Warner's a big Luke Weaver advocate as well. We've had some debates on that. He's actually higher than me. Last year at this time, and even the year before that, he was higher than me on Luke Weaver for a long time. So, you know. That prospect pod, we had a couple nice calls on it, and that's one of them. I'm going to take it.
All right, let's move on and talk about Matt Olson, who's putting together a pretty nice season, considering he hasn't even gotten to 200 plate appearances yet for
Went
the A's.
Deep again tonight.
Yeah, I mean, so far this season, 267, 360, 663 slug, or triple slash. He has hit 22 home runs. Is Matt Olson legit?
Yeah, he is. He's made some swing adjustments, and he is 100% legit. I had a Twitter post, I think it was yesterday, and there's a image of Matt Olson with all the home runs, and I was kind of joking around. I said, I'll never, ever give up on another prospect I like. Because I just kept repeating it, like the old Bart Simpson writing on the chalkboard thing. But I liked Olson a lot when he was in the Cal League. But that's when the Cal League was the Cal League with the big offensive parks that are now those the two of the three biggest offensive parks in the Cal League no longer exist because the teams moved and folded and stuff like that. So the Cal League is now a pitcher's league, as weird as that is to analyze. Now it is, but back in 2014 it wasn't. So a lot of people discounted the 37 home runs he hit that in that year. 262, 404, 543 was the slash line in. Cal League is at 266, 354, 651 now. So obviously the power is going to come down. 22 home runs in 54 games is absurd. The on-base skills, though, 100% for real. He's a guy that's always been patient. He strikes out a lot. You're looking at a lot of minor league seasons where he's upwards of 140, 130 strikeouts. Actually, the last 4 years, to be honest. And this year, when you count the major leagues and minors time, he's up over that number also. He's going to have nice dual eligibility, though, at the corner. He's going to have first base and he's going to have outfield. He's going to have to be a guy I'm going to have to add into my rankings. He's definitely a top 20 first baseman for me next year. Outfielder, obviously not. There's a lot of more talent there, and he doesn't possess any of the speed we're looking for. But real quick for you, Joey Gallo or Matt Olson next year? I think it's Olson for me. Especially in 5x5.
Oh, man. You mean in average leagues?
Yeah.
I'm going to go Gallo. Olsen's going to – I mean, outside of Yahoo leagues, Olson is going to be first base only.
Yeah.
Gallo's going to have first, third, and outfield.
Yeah.
I feel like the positional eligibility helps – I think Gallo's role on the team is a I guess they're both pretty safe. But I mean, the power with Gallo is just so immense. I mean, it just, and the team around him is going to be so much better than the A's.
Yeah, no, it's a
fair
comparison.
I think there's a real chance, and I should probably, real quick while I'm talking, bring up the A's roster. I think there's a real chance that the A's, you know, dump more guys. So like Chris Davis, I would expect him to be on a different team come next season.
I read something that he might be a non-tender candidate, which I kind of find interesting.
You mean insane?
No, it's the A's, and they don't want to pay somebody that's... You saw the value of a guy like that. J.D. Martinez went for peanuts at the trade deadline, and Chris Davis isn't J.D. Martinez. You know.
That's insane, though. I mean, I mean, like, well, and don't get me wrong. We said the exact same thing about Chris Carter, who was non-tendered, and I mean, and look, you know, what happened to him. But let's see. Chris Davis is owed or made $5 million this year. So with adding in arbitration money, he'd be looking at probably around $8 to $9 million next year. That's insane for a guy like Chris Davis. I mean, we're not talking about a guy who, you know, is hitting .220.
No, but I don't think it'll happen, but I was just reading something about that.
I mean, Chris Davis has 39 home runs, hitting .242, .331, .518 this year. I mean, 102 RBIs on the A's of all teams.
Yeah. But I don't know. I like Olsen a lot. I think a batting average ultimately for Olsen falls in the 250 range, while I think for Gallo it's going to hover around 200. And I think that's the difference for me between those two guys. Mm-hmm. But
wow, I'm just looking at the A's contracts for next year.
It's bad. They got nothing locked. I mean, it's bad.
I mean, they already traded away Madsen. They traded away Davis, Axford, and Plouffe. Well, Plouffe's not on the team anymore, but both those contracts completely off the books. I mean, other than Santiago Casilla and Matt Joyce, who they've got both for $6 million next year, there's everybody else is in arbitration. And I mean, like, none of them, a lot of them are entering the first year of Did you realize that Marcus Semien's entering his first year of arbitration next year?
That seems crazy. Seems like he's been around forever.
Yeah.
I remember his White Sox days.
Yeah, that's crazy. As far as Olsen goes, I agree with you. I think I will end up putting him just probably right in the back end of my top 20 first baseman, but that's because first base turned out to be a hell of a lot deeper than I or anybody else thought it would be.
Definitely did. And I think Oakland did well. I think Yonder Alonso is a free agent anyways, but they did well moving him for whatever they could get to play Olsen because why not? So,
Let's go ahead and talk about Trevor Bauer, who has been absolutely fantastic as of late. Let's see, in his last, the last time he gave up more than 4 earned runs was May 1st.
That seems unreal. Talk about the same Trevor Bauer?
Yeah. And the last time he gave up more than 4 walks was June 7th.
That's a big thing with him. So, yep.
So, if we look at his stats from June 7th, we're talking about a guy who has a 3.61 ERA. He is walking about 3 per 9. He's striking out over a batter an inning. Giving up about a home run per 9. I mean, this is a guy who has put up some pretty awesome numbers, and if you jumped on board in the last few months, he's really helped propel your pitching staff. Is this legitimate? Are these legitimate changes to you, or is this something that you kind of profited from this year, but you're not going to take a shot on next year?
I kind of buy into it being a little bit different. I happened to catch that Travis Sawchuk article on Fangraphs. I'm sure you saw it too.
I haven't yet, but I'm eyeing two of them right now.
Yeah, Bauer. Basically, what he's doing, according to that article, is he's throwing that curveball more, and throwing the two-seam fastball like zero amount of times now. Pretty much breaking ball, slider, and mixing in the fastball. I don't want to say as a third pitch, but as far as for fastballs go, the percentages are way down. So I think you have to like what you're seeing, because when a guy changes, he's making significant changes, you can kind of believe in the numbers a little bit. But then again, you also see why is he throwing the off-speed pitch? Is there an injury or something that's going to be happening because he's throwing the off-speed pitch more? I don't think so, but I mean, you have to factor in all these different things. I wouldn't mind taking a flyer on Trevor Bauer next year, going from talking next season, but I think someone else is always going to be a little bit more aggressive on him. I don't own him anywhere this year, so I think someone that might own him is going to notice what he's doing more, I think, and kind of be in on him for what he did for them down the stretch this year, because he's winning a lot of guys, a lot of leagues, I'm sure, just with how he's pitching. So he'll be on someone else's team next year, but I'm not completely ignoring him. I typically would.
He'll be on my team because I've been a Trevor Bauer apologist for a long time, and I have profited.
I jumped off that ship.
Yeah, I've profited fairly well from him this year because I do own him in a number of leagues. I mean, for him, it's always been about pitch mix, and it's usually because he wants to throw 40 different pitches.
He's inside his own head.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of those guys that there are guys within Major League Baseball that aren't very bright and refuse to look at the numbers, refuse to look at advanced stats, refuse to look at game film. And then there are guys who are too smart for their own good. And Trevor Bauer is one of those guys that's too smart for his own good, as much as his public persona would make you think he's kind of an idiot.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy. That's for sure.
He's very much into
Driveline baseball.
Mm-hmm. And anything that'll give him an edge. And I think he kind of overanalyzes things. And I think this year, either him or the Indians have done a very good job of starting to simplify things. I mean, he's pretty much cut out some of the pitches he's been throwing in the past, barely throwing the slider, barely throwing the splitter, which was awful to begin with. So I think the fact that they're focusing on kind of what works and kind of eliminating what doesn't work, I think has been very beneficial for him. And I mean, I've always loved the skill set. You've got to love a guy who goes up there, will throw any pitch in any count. You know, nothing necessarily jumps off the page in terms of you know, swing and strike rate is just about right in line where it's always been. His first pitch strike rate is actually lower than it's been in the past. But I mean, he's limiting contact, which is a good thing. And, you know, I don't think he's necessarily trying to blow every single person away. But he's doing a good job of getting swings and misses within the zone. And I think these are things to be excited about. Now, does that jump him up into my top 30 starting pitchers for next year? No, of course not. But I think he's a guy that is going to float in the top 40 to top 50 range, which I don't think you're going to have to pay very much for. I think, you know, you'll probably end up getting him in the top 60, top 70 starters. And I think there's profit to be made on that.
Yeah, I found that snippet I wanted to read from that article. It's from Travis Sawchuk's article on Fangraphs. Please check it out. It's outstanding deep dive into the evolution of Trevor Bauer. In his first five seasons, he threw his curveball 14% of the time. He went up to 19% just last year. But since the end of May, he's throwing curveballs at a 32% rate.
Mm-hmm.
And there you go. I mean, it's his best pitch. Obviously, if you watch him pitch, you can identify that as being his best pitch. And he's realizing it, and he's kind of – I like to look at it as kind of taking on the mentality of a reliever and just kind of throw your best stuff and shelve the crappy stuff and just go get guys.
Yeah.
He's got the mean streak. You saw Avi Garcia and him getting in a little fun exchange.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got the mentality and the stuff to be an ace. He just doesn't have the command. But the command of the curveball is his best pitch. He even commands it better than his fastball. So hopefully he can keep it up.
His two worst pitches have been his splitter and his slider, and he's throwing the splitter less than 1% this year, less than 1% of the time this year, and he's throwing his slider 3.5% of the time this year now. Yep. So, I mean, he's pretty much eliminating the pitches that he threw that weren't very good.
Good.
All right, let's move on. Talk about Tim Anderson, who is who's having a pretty hot time as of late. And I think you'd be surprised if I told you he was hitting 262. Now, unfortunately, because he doesn't walk,
on base percentage 267.
Yes, he has on bases 281. So like that's not great. But 16 home runs, 13 stolen bases. What are your thoughts on Tim Anderson for next year?
I live in Chicago, so you get a lot of hear more of the local stories going on with Tim Anderson. The White Sox, kind of Rick Hahn, in a lot of interviews I've read, has kind of come out and said Tim Anderson's one of his best friends was shot and killed this summer or this spring,
Jesus.
Sometime this year. So he's been dealing with major off the field problems that I don't want to major off the field issues that we can't comprehend, especially when you have to go play baseball in the public spotlight every day. So he's been talking with, according to Rick Hahn, a bunch of sports psychologists, and the White Sox have set him up with some you know nice people to talk to, and it's helped him out. And I'd like to think that this is playing a big part of what he's doing lately. You know, it's always nice to be able to get things off your chest in a professional way and get help that you might need for whatever reason. And it's kind of an example of how players aren't just numbers on a spreadsheet. He's having success despite that. we joked about his walk rate last year. It was 3%. This year it's at 2.3. So he's pushing the narrative of he's the kind of guy that he's different because he offers you steals. Not as many though this year as I would have thought, but normally guys with that walk rate, I completely erase off my draft board for better or for worse. Even in, you know, batting average leagues, I still tend to ignore guys with walk rates like that. That's something I'm looking to change, because although you do take the guy, the high walk rate is always a nice tiebreaker. But Tim Anderson is a nice dual threat guy you're missing out on. He might hit 20 home runs next year with the way balls are flying out of the yard now. He's already got 16.
Yeah, he might hit it this year if he gets hot in the last week.
Which stays hot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the 13 stolen bases, like I said, is a little bit of a decrease. But he's a sleeper candidate to go 20-20 next year. And, you know, he's going to go about the 15-16 range, I think, among shortstops, and that's going to be a bargain because the batting average isn't going to hurt. 262 doesn't hurt you nowadays. I think there's more upside there. Like we said, he had off some struggles earlier in the year that have kind of pushed him back. The defensive struggles are also – he's getting better defensively at shortstop. Not that the White Sox are going to move him, but he's a nice player going forward. He's still extremely young. He's only 24. He's going to be 25 next year. He's a guy that I'll probably own several shares of next year. And I expect, you know, a better season, and hopefully he can get the personal issues put behind him. We all hope he does, and he's got the speed, is flashing a little bit of power in this day and age. So I'm a fan. I like Tim Anderson going forward.
All right, I'm going to lay out his second half numbers so far. Hitting 293, 7 home runs with 8 stolen bases, only caught once. Those are pretty nice numbers. I mean, that's a 15-15 guy, maybe even, a 20-20 guy next year with a 293 at the shortstop position if he could duplicate those numbers in the first and second half next year.
I'll take 280. Shit.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll take a 15-15 guy at 280 at the shortstop position that you're getting outside the top 10 at the position.
Yep.
And we forget, he's only 24 years old. I mean, dude's still filling out. Dude's still maturing as a player. I think there's a lot to be, a lot to like. You wish he would just walk more than 2% of the time.
Yeah, it always makes you nervous. You look at it, it definitely jumps off the page, and it's a shame because he's having a nice season in context of things. But it jumps off the page when you see that walk rate. It's like, oh shit. But.
So, I mean, OBP leagues, obviously, it takes a huge hit there.
Huge, huge,
I mean,
huge.
He absolutely destroys your OBP, especially when he's not hitting well.
Mm-hmm.
But in average leagues, I think he's a guy that probably should be a top 12 shortstop coming into next year, and I don't think he's going to get drafted that way.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you 100%. And I want to say this, though, real quick. I do think even if you do play in batting average leagues, it's important to know what the OBP of these guys is roughly going to be. Because when a guy goes into a slump that doesn't walk, you're going to feel it.
Because he can't steal bases if he's not getting on first. And he can't score adage, runs. Right? And yeah, he can't score runs. So, I mean, it definitely hurts the bottom line.
Yep.
But at the same time, I mean, I think the White Sox are going to start getting better and better as guys start coming up. You know, there's a real chance that in spite of the fact that he doesn't walk, that they continue to kind of hit him on top of the lineup at times.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, I play in mostly OBP formats, and look at a guy like Matt Carpenter this year. If you're playing 5x5 with average, he's hitting .239 with 20 home runs. That's not great for a first baseman.
Mm-hmm.
You look at if you play in OBP leagues, the OBP is .382. I mean, that's a hell of a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a top 10 first baseman with a .382 OBP and 20 home runs. So you got to look at that because the valuations of players changes extremely. But Tim Anderson is a nice guy. He's kind of similar. He's going to be in the range of Andrelton Simmons, Orlando Arcia, and Jorge Polanco kind of next year for me. I'll end up with one of those guys, whichever one slips the most.
Okay, speaking of that group, why don't we just do kind of a would you rather for next year at the shortstop position? So would you rather Andrelton Simmons or Tim Anderson?
Pull up Simmons, stolen base numbers real quick. Should be around where I think they are. Then I'm probably going to go Simmons, but let's see. Yeah, I'm going Simmons. I think the batting average is a little safer.
He walks a little bit more. I mean, the defense always keeps him in there, though. Not that Tim Anderson is necessarily going to get set. But he also bats at the top of the lineup in front of Mike Trout, typically. So
who's he? Is he good?
Hmm?
Is Mike Trout good?
Yeah, Mike Trout, he's pretty decent. He's an up-and-comer.
I saw a stat today. He's 26 years old, and he's already the Angels' all-time leader in WAR for the franchise.
I heard a stat.
That's pretty amazing.
He's
been around 60 years, and he's
I'm double-checking it. Okay. Maybe I don't know what I heard. I had heard that he was like leading the league in WRC plus this year, in spite of the fact he missed so many games. It's not true, so I can't remember where I heard that. But I mean, he's in spite of the fact that he missed a ton of time. I mean, he's still just been just fantastic this year.
Yeah, he's great.
Let's go ahead and move on. Or actually, let me do two more. Would you rather
take Simmons also? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm taking Simmons. Would you rather have Tim Anderson or Addison Russell?
Tim Anderson. No slight against Addison Russell, but stolen bases, man. Russell's not going to give you any of those. And Anderson's got a lot of upside, 13 for 14. Going to think he runs more next year. That percentage is elite. And he's obviously got the skill set to do it. I think Russell can hit 20 home runs next year. But 20 home runs at shortstop, all you need is Paul DeJong to do that for you, right?
Yeah, I mean, Didi Gregorius is there already, too.
I love Didi. I wish he would run more. He looks like he should.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'm with you, even though I think that I think Russell will get better. I mean, we forgot Russell's only 23.
100% get better, but I mean,
at this point, you've got to take the speed.
If I was drafting a real life baseball team, I'd probably take Addison Russell because the defense is short. But
right. Orlando Arcia.
This is where my line was. I was going to ask you this if you didn't ask me. Honestly, it's a toss-up for me. But so a tiebreaker goes to Arcia because walk percentage.
Yeah, walk percentage, better team around him.
Numbers are going to be very similar, I think, from a 5x5 standpoint for both of these guys.
The only thing that bothers me a little bit is the Brewers' stolen bases as a team were down a little bit this year. And he was not very efficient on the base pass, 13 and 19. But I mean, that can, you know, you move two of those caught stealings over to the stolen base department, and you're looking at a guy that is really efficient, you know? It's not necessarily going to worry me too much. He's already hitting for more power than I think a lot of people expected him to. And I really think there's a 30 steal season coming for Arcia.
Yeah, and not to nitpick things totally too much, but, I mean, you look at the National League Central, Wilson Contreras, Tucker Barnhart, and Yadier Molina are three catchers that are pretty hard to run on.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that has to factor into it a little bit.
Yeah. All right, let's move on and talk about J.A. Happ, who, once again, is putting up a pretty nice season that nobody is talking about. Almost a strikeout per inning, 3.76 ERA. You know, the fact that he is only winning won nine games so far this year, I think, is bringing down his value in people's eyes.
Now, eligible for the Cy Young, doesn't have enough wins.
He's going to be going into his last year under contract in Toronto, which means he potentially
paid.
Well, he potentially could get moved as Toronto looks to probably rebuild next season. So, what are your thoughts on J.A. Happ?
He's always a guy that I kind of lumped him in until this year with Marco Estrada as a guy that, you know, always you forget about him, but they put up decent numbers. It seems to always happen. But with J.A. But I like what he's doing. The home run per fly ball is still it's shockingly kind of a low number considering the ballpark he plays in. Pitching in Toronto might be the worst situation in the American League to pitch in with the other lineups that come through there. The other ballparks in that division you have to mess with. And he's done very, very well the last 3 years now. It's kind of hard to be underrated for 3 years in a row. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that's where we are with Happ. But he's been great. He's a nice guy to round out the back of your staff. Doesn't hurt you anywhere, really. Home runs are a little high, like I said, but if you normalize it for the division he plays in and stuff, it's probably better than league average. So I'm a fan. I always scooped up Happ in a couple places this year. Unfortunately, I had to drop him because I had a DL crunch, and he was one of the guys on the lower end of my roster that went on the DL, which sucked because I lost Happ. But he's a good guy. I'll take him on again next year, and he's going to cost nothing again. So I look forward to it.
Yeah, I mean, especially if you see him get moved out of Rogers Center. I mean, this could be a guy that really, really improves with a better home ballpark getting out of the AL East. So, I mean, just kind of keep an eye on the rumors in terms of whether
or not.
Love
to see that at least.
Yeah, I mean, if he could get moved to a team, even to a team with necessarily not a great ballpark, but, I mean, he could do, you know, a lot more damage in a place like Texas who needs starting pitching,
yeah.
You know, could use a left-hander. That's actually steady. If he could end up in a place like Atlanta or a place like Philadelphia, you'd be pretty happy with him getting out of the AL East. He's just perennially underrated. I mean, this is going to be his third straight season where he has put up a sub 4 ERA, where he's, put up, you know, this year he's going to put up less innings than he has in the past, probably ends around 150, but the previous two seasons, 195 innings, 172 innings. He's a guy that usually gets you 170 or more, so he's pretty reliable. Nothing to write home about, but a guy that I think people just kind of miss out on and kind of just ignore, thinking there is a ton of regressions coming, and every year he beats the projections.
Yeah, it was his elbow injury. He had an elbow flare-up that he missed some time with this year, but obviously no surgery, and came back. He looks to be strong. So
yeah, seems fine. I mean, it's been a pretty impressive run since returning. Since August 2nd, his first start in August, he's got a 3.19 ERA, 9.56 Ks per nine, giving up less than a home or about a half a home run per nine.
He's a guy you can go ahead and write in the projections next year. He's going to finish somewhere between 10 and 12 wins. He's going to have a 3.7, 3.8 ERA. He's going to have a 1.3 whip, and he's going to strike out about 8.5 guys per nine. You can put that, write that down in blood if you want.
You can get him as a top 50 starting pitcher.
And even despite the elbow risk, I was going to say, you take the shot because he's not going to cost you anything.
Yeah.
Relative to what you can get anyway.
And he could put together another season like last year where he put up 195 innings of 3.18 ERA.
Yeah, that's crazy, especially in the ballpark, man. I can't say it enough. He's extremely underrated.
Yep. Let's talk about Carlos Gonzalez, because Cargo had an absolutely atrocious start to the season. His triple slash for the first half, 221, 299, 338 slug. Yep. However, in the second half, 307, 379, 514. Now, the power hasn't come all the way back, but he's showing that he's healthy. He's going to be a free agent, which obviously limits a little bit of his upside because he's probably more than likely not going to be playing in Coors next year. But is Carlos Gonzalez a rebound candidate for you?
Yeah, I think so. As long as you're factoring in, be prepared to have an alternative in case he flounders. But I would take a shot here. I do think he's probably going to get downgraded too much for leaving Coors Field next year. I think that kind of works both ways. Hopefully, he can go somewhere where he can DH. That'd be kind of nice for his skill set. Of staying healthy is not his skill that he possesses. I know his last two seasons he's played 150 games, but he always appears to get nicked up. He's good for DL stint all the time. I think just letting him DH would be better, but then again, there's the mental block that comes with not playing the field and being able to hit. Who knows what he's got with that? But I'm taking a shot here. I do think leaving Coors Field, which I think there's still a chance he comes back to the Rockies next year. I think it kind of strikes me as a organization that kind of wants to keep the band together, so to speak. You know what I mean? Because they're not very good very often, and they
they've got so much outfield depth.
I know, but I think they'll trade some of that depth for some arms.
I don't know. I mean, they've got $20 million coming off the books. I think if they're gonna go, I think if they're going to do anything, they'll go out and buy an arm.
Yeah, I can see it. But I mean, look at Carlos Gonzalez. I think if he ends up somewhere, say Baltimore next year, I think I'm still in on him.
Mm-hmm. I think Baltimore would be a fantastic location too for him.
He seems like that kind of guy. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Every year they seem to get one guy.
Nelson Cruz, mm-hmm. Mark Trumbo, and then they overpay for Trumbo and ruin it. But yeah, they do. They always have the Wellington Castillo this year.
Do you think there's any chance the Rockies offer him a qualifying offer? Because I don't think there is. Because I think he'd take it, right? Wouldn't you?
You'd have to. You'd have to take it if you're him.
Because, I mean, he's going to be looking as one of those pillow deals anyways, kind of reclaim his value a little bit and then try to go cash in on it. Because he's only, shockingly, only 32 years old next month.
Yeah. I mean, what do you think he gets, a 3-year deal this winter? 4 years?
I bet you he takes a 3-year deal with a 1-year opt-out.
I think that's a perfect deal for everybody mm-hmm. involved in that. I mean, get him to American League team, Toronto. Get him to Baltimore, somewhere like that. White Sox, they need a bat. Get him somewhere like that. Let him put him in an offensive park. It won't be Coors. I'm still going to be in on the value. I think this year is as low as it's going to get for him. I still believe in the true talent. You watch him play, you're still – Cardinals just played the Rockies not too long ago, and I was still worried about it every time it came up to the plate, just because he's such a good baseball player. I know that's not fantasy analysis, but I'm all aboard the Carlos Gonzalez train. I like the skill set he offers. I'm disappointed in the steals, but those are never coming back, unfortunately. But I think he's got upside. He's going to be a bat that you can get late enough in the draft that's going to have considerable upside. So for us fantasy folks.
I'm going to guess he ends up – I think Baltimore is actually a really great location.
That wouldn't it?
I mean, just kind of, cursory looking at teams and off the top of my head thinking about who could use, a left fielder.
Maybe he goes to Kansas City for cheap when all their guys leave. Who knows?
No.
I doubt it.
Yeah, and Kansas City is just going to run out whoever they've got left on that roster, but
Paulo Orlando and Jorge Soler next year corners.
Baltimore has been running out a starting lineup with only one left-handed pitcher or one left-handed hitter, and that's Chris Davis.
So, yeah, and they have Trey Mancini running around in left field, so that's not going to work.
Yeah, exactly.
Well.
So, I could definitely see him ending up in Baltimore. I could see him ending up in San Francisco.
That'd be good. How long have they been rumored to get a power bat, Justin? Like 4 or 5 years now?
Since Barry Bonds left.
Yeah. I mean, isn't that the rumor? The Giants are interested in Giancarlo Stanton. Oh, too bad he just signed a 15-year deal for $8 billion.
I think they would love to take that contract. But
see, I don't think – the shocking thing is with the hot second half Stanton has that contract passed through waivers. Nobody wanted it.
Which is shocking to me that nobody put a claim on it.
If my Cardinals team, back to the homerism again, but if my Cardinals team claimed him, I'd be happy with it. It's not my money. Who cares? Mm-hmm. And he's
well. I think the problem is it puts everybody over the luxury tax this year. I think that's one of the reasons why nobody took it.
And they also kind of fear that the Marlins, who are in the process of getting sold, would be just like, all right, well, fuck it, he's yours.
I don't think the Marlins would do that. I think the Marlins want someone to take the entire contract and give up their top prospects, which would be fine for me as a Giants fan because the Giants' top prospects, play in like Little League right now.
Hell yeah, Ramos. Yeah, mm-hmm. But no, I mean, the thing with the Stanton deal is, yeah, if they want someone to take on that entire contract, they're not getting a single piece in return. Mm-hmm. It's just not happening. But if they are willing to eat half that contract, they could get anybody they want.
Yeah.
So it kind of works both ways, you know. They got a little leverage there, but you have to agree, I'm sure, to not opt out to wherever he would go, and there's a lot of things involved.
Oh, there's no way he's opting. I mean, all that contract's backloaded, so there's no way he's opting out. He wants that money.
It's the type of deal that has to be done in the offseason. There's zero chance he ever gets moved in the middle of a season because there's so many variables.
Yeah. All right, we've run so long on just kind of getting off kilter a little bit that we're just going to finish up on this last guy. It's Carlos Martinez, and I put him on the list, one, because you're a huge Cardinals homer like we talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But two, you ranked him in your initial ranks, and obviously you're free to change those a number of times before we get to the season.
And I 100% will.
Yeah. I mean, we've already talked about kind of your shortstop guys, and you're already moving guys around there without even mm-hmm. knowing it. But you did rank him ahead of guys like Jacob DeGrom, Robbie Ray, sure. Carlos Carrasco, Luis mm-hmm. Severino. And so I want to get your take. Why are you ranking him so high coming into next year?
They are all – I'm going to start with the caveat. They're all pretty damn close. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would throw Chris Archer in that grouping as well. Gerrit Cole. But I think the thing with Carlos Martinez, I think he's missing that one – he needs to take that one step forward to jump into total elite range. And the problem with Martinez this year is he's getting unlucky home run-wise. He's got a 3.57 ERA despite a 16% fly ball home run to fly ball ratio, which is way too high for a guy with the stuff that he has, a slider that bites down and away. Excuse me, a running two-seamer and a sinker. You know, he works down in the zone with everything. That's way too high of a home run percentage. Ultimately, I think he gets the home run percentage down to a manageable 12-13% next year, and that shaves down the ERA to probably a 3.2 to be conservative, and he's got the peripherals behind it, cut the walks, strikeouts are up at a major league high as a starting pitcher, and the walks are at a career low. I think he's trending in the right direction. He's 25 years old, and he's been entrusted kind of with the keys to the organization. They put a lot of pressure on him this year. And if the manager would stop leaving him in one inning too long every time,
help. With that bullpen, he doesn't really have too many options.
Yeah, no, he's hamstrung by the bullpen for sure. But I'll link the post. I'll find it and put it on my Twitter. But he has like the highest ERA. This is a weird stat. He has like the highest ERA allowed in last innings pitched of appearances for a starter. Basically, it means he gets blown up every time before he leaves. I don't know if anyone watched the Cubs-Cardinal game this weekend. He was cruising along, had a shutout through five innings, and seventh spot came up in the sixth inning. But the thing with that is a lot of those runs are unearned because he made an error.
Mm-hmm.
This is the narrative that he gets unfairly thrown at him because he's a Latino player. But he's a very fiery guy on the mound, and I think sometimes it gets the best of him. They've been working with him to compose himself a little bit more, and I think ultimately he will. I know that sounds stupid, but it'll help. It can't hurt. And I think ultimately he takes a step forward. The home runs are going to come back down to a normal rate for a guy with his stuff. You can't say he's going to have, you know, a league average home run for fly ball ratio for a guy like this is too high. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Like, he's got the stuff is too great.
I have a question for you. Would you consider the Cardinals' defense better or worse than last year?
Extremely better. Not even close. Way better.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Because his infield hit percentage is actually up, which was a little bit surprising to me because I originally figured it would be better losing a guy like Johnny Peralta out of it. A couple of the other changes they've made. So
yeah,
I'm surprised. I think you're right, and I'm not necessarily. I didn't bring him up to kind of give you
too much shit.
Because I think the only person I might move, I definitely would move Severino above him.
Yeah, I was worried about him because I think Martinez has a longer track record than Severino,
mm-hmm. and that's fair. I just have been a, I mean, you know me, I've been a Severino guy for a long time.
Some guys that don't like him too much. So,
but I mean, I love Martinez. You know, DeGrom is another guy I'd be tempted to, but I think the injury past keeps Martinez
Robbie
ahead of
Ray
him for me.
Was a tough one for me. Robbie Ray was tough.
Yeah, Ray just continued, and he was going to be on this. On this episode, we just were running a little bit long, and I gotta get to sleep before it gets too late. He still walks too many guys.
Yep, and that's the complaint with you nailed the DeGrom thing, the Mets and the injuries. I'm gonna knock him down a little bit. Robbie Ray, the walks. Carlos Carrasco, the health. And I've never been a Carrasco guy. Have been on.
I'm a huge Carrasco guy, but the health and then just the random blow-ups.
Which is why Chris Archer is also down there, mm-hmm. because I feel like he has a lot of those random blow-ups. And then Severino's in that same tier, but lower end, because I don't trust him to repeat this year. I mean, and I think Martinez still has upside in there. I think everyone agrees with me on that. I'm a Cardinals fan, but I also think a guy with that stuff, there's considerable upside.
Wow. I didn't even realize this. I actually may move Robbie Ray ahead of him.
Yeah, and Robbie Ray is fantastic,
he's cut his walks per nine in almost half in the second half.
I just tried searching for him. I wonder why it wouldn't come up. It kept auto-correcting his last name to Robbie Rat, so that's why I could. But
yeah, his walks per nine in the first half, 4.42. Walks per nine in the second half, 2.40 for Robbie Ray.
See, that's considerable improvement. So that's
and
good.
And his strikeout rate has gone up in that same. Yeah, I think I'd put Ray ahead of him.
I might too. And
but I mean, I'd move Strasburg down.
I love Strasburg. I think
I know you do, but I mean, like, will he ever get to 200 innings again?
Probably not. But if he's managed correctly, he can still be an asset and not get to 200 innings. Guys like Greinke and Bumgarner, I think, are in a tier above Martinez.
Mm-hmm.
Still, I think Strasburg's probably for most people in the same tier as Martinez, but for me, he's going to be a little bit higher. But you look at Robbie Ray, he made an adjustment. Ray's next on the list, we might as well talk about him for a second. I saw he made an adjustment for a tempo, sped up his delivery a lot. That seems to be a thing that's helped him with the command. That was a second half adjustment he made, it was a second half adjustment he made in the second half of last season. That has carried over. He's working faster, throwing more strikes, getting in a rhythm, helping the defense out, which is nice. He used to be a really slow worker. And there's a lot of wild card guys right below Martinez in my rankings. Yu Darvish, Jake Arrieta, Noah Syndergaard. What do you expect from any of those guys? Shohei Ohtani, who's going to have to be ranked. So that's going to be tough to figure out because you have no idea where he's going to be at.
Let's talk about Ohtani real quick. He wasn't supposed to be on the show notes. I still don't believe he's coming. Like, no, I know all the reports are saying that he is. He just leaves so much money on the table.
He'll make that back up, though. He's like the endorsement king over there, I suppose. I say over there like a American idiot. He's, you know, an endorsement king in Japan. So I think he's going to make that money back regardless.
I just don't believe it. I mean, he's leaving tens of millions of dollars on the table by coming early. It seems like someone will talk him out of it at some point before he agrees to be posted.
His agent's going to be. His agent's going to be, hey, just hold off. But he had health concerns this year in Japan also. So I think that might be part of the reason to come over.
Where would you put him among starting pitchers?
I had him on my list at 19, and that's completely wild card. I think if I know where he comes up, and know where he's going to land because he's subject to those bonus pools. So there's certain teams that can't bid any more than $300,000 to get him. But he might still go there because he's already got made for life money. You know what I mean? A lot of these amateur guys don't.
Mm.
He already does. So he can pretty much go wherever he wants. I mean, I kind of had a Twitter storm about him the other day. As a stud pitcher, I think he's a combination of Syndergaard and Yu Darvish as far as stuff and delivery and mechanics. I think he's a top 20 arm already. despite not knowing where he's going to be. And that's also not factoring in his bat for fantasy, because that's a whole nother can of worms, because he's going to be worth owning as a hitter also. I think when he comes over, he's going to be able to dictate that, because he's going to have so many bidders that can only offer him X amount of dollars. It's capped. So he's basically going to get, from a dollars and years source, or from a dollar standpoint, 20 of the same contract. You know what I mean? Because there's only a certain number you can only offer him. So there's going to be a lot of people, well, you come here, we'll let you play right field when you're not pitching. Or some guys will let you DH if it's American League Park. So he's going to be a factor offensively when he comes here as well, because he's going to be able to dictate that. And I think he's got more value as an American League player, because then he can DH. And I think as a DH, you can play every day you're not starting. Mm-hmm. I think in the National League, if you're going to be a starting pitcher, you're not going to really play as much as you would like. The day before you start, you're probably not going to play the field. And the day after you pitch, you're probably not going to play the field either, because injury risks, and then you have a sore arm. So, I mean, like, so not factoring is bad. I think he's a 40 hit on the hit tool. So I think he won't be a big batting average asset, but he's a 70 raw power guy. That swing is enormous. But when he does connect, it's going to fly. He's above average speed also. So I think he can stick out there. But I think here's the issue with fantasy leagues, is I think you have to make him two separate entities. I think you have to make Shohei Ohtani the pitcher available in fantasy leagues. And then I think you also have to make Shohei Ohtani the hitter available, and you have to be two separate players. Because I don't know how else you can do that.
Well, I mean, I know in CBS I've seen offensive players gain pitcher eligibility. Now, okay. In ESPN, in Yahoo, I don't know how they would work that out, because they separate those two. Or the pitchers and the hitters.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm pretty sure in CBS, if you gain one, you could actually slot him in. You can't do it on mobile, but you could do it on your on the computer. Because yeah. I used to play in an American League only league, where you got in season eligibility after one game.
Oh, okay.
So, if your pitcher played the outfield, all of a sudden your pitcher had outfield eligibility the next day. So wow. you were able to slot guys kind of around like that. Obviously, you would never want to do that.
I think it's
possible. And really, it's a simple coding issue that I don't think will be too big of an issue. But it's definitely something that's going to be discussed at length, because these major sites are going to have to figure out what they're going to do.
Because I think
it's a stupid idea to have two of the same guy in a system.
Yeah, but I also think you can't. Obviously, we saw Yahoo with the Kyle Schwarber catching thing, which is still complete batshit crazy, because he doesn't even have enough innings to be eligible next year. And they gifted him the spot. You know what I mean? And they gifted it to him this year. But you look at, like, you can't. Otani's going to change the fantasy game, and I'm not saying that as hyperbole. I mean that. He's going to change this, because if he signs in the National League, you're going to have to count pitcher hitting stats. You can't just count his. What if the Bumgarner guy is going to want the Bumgarner five home runs he hits a year?
I just think the way it's going to work is that you're not going to be able to count his when he's pitching. You can slot him in as an outfielder.
Yes, that's how exactly it should go. Yes.
You're not going to be able to count his hitting stats on the days he pitches. And, I mean, that's probably fair.
Yeah, it's the only way it can be, because the only thing I propose is, well, see, you really can't do this because American League pitchers, it doesn't count. But, like, for National League pitchers, you count every offensive contribution except for batting average. But
yeah, that's,
I don't know if that would really work either.
It's too slippery of a slope. And, I mean, I'll make the argument that the Bumgarner guy won't want that, because he won't want the 220 average it comes with.
No, but I mean, in daily leagues, though, I mean, if you don't have a guy starting, you could at least have somebody hit. I don't know. That's extreme situations, and that's what we do, is we think about the extremes.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, because, I mean, I have no idea how they're going to handle it, but, I mean, that's how I would do it.
I think Fantrax has said, I believe, I could be wrong on this, they said they're going to have him in the player pool as two separate entities.
And I don't think that's right.
I think it's the best solution we have.
So one,
right,
so,
now.
So you could draft the offensive.
You could trade him for him.
And I could draft the pitcher one. That's ridiculous. You're taking one player.
Yeah, but he's using two different roles because he's
but
going
he's
to.
But he's still one player. You're still drafting the guy. Like you're not.
Yeah.
Like we're not drafting. Like when you draft someone, you're not drafting the skill set.
No,
you're drafting the person and putting him on your team. He can't play in Oakland and in Baltimore at the same time.
No, but he can play offense and defense.
But he couldn't play. He couldn't pitch to himself.
No, he couldn't. But.
But I mean that's the equation. If you and I are playing on it in a head-to-head league, and you've got the pitcher,
we can both own Ohtani.
Yeah, and you've got the pitcher, and I've got the hitter. That's ridiculous. That's a ridiculous idea.
I think that's the best way to handle it.
And no, it's not. Like I don't understand. Like how is that the best way to handle it? Because it makes it easier for the programmers. No, he's one guy.
I think if he goes to the American, well, then if he's one guy, then he's going in the top five. In drafts.
Top five overall?
Yep. Wow. Because the bat is that good and he can pitch like an ace. If he's one guy, he's going in the top five.
All right. Well, I wouldn't take him in the top five, but...
I wouldn't either, but that's a hell of an advantage to have over your opponent.
Yeah, I think that's... I mean, that's a lot of stats for one guy.
Two roster stats.
But, I mean, ultimately, we're saying that that's the guy... That's who he is, right? I mean... You know, if he's a guy who's going to be able to hit 30 home runs and pitch in 30 games.
Yep.
I mean, isn't that a top five player in WAR?
You have to be, right?
Like, I mean, yeah. I mean, in terms
and then
of...
I think in fantasy value, if he hits 240, I'm being conservative. Say he hits 230 with 25 home runs and then pitches to a 3.5 ERA with 230 strikeouts, that's a top five player.
Yeah.
Wow,
this is a really interesting
conversation. He's gonna break fantasy baseball. I had a tweet storm. I urge you to check it out because we had Doug Dennis and Rob Silver were also in it, commenting and going back and forth with a nice friendly exchange. And there's so many scenarios. Like, what if he's in the National League and he pitches six innings, but instead of getting taken out, he goes to the outfield? What happens then? Do you get his hitting stats for when he's not pitching?
Yeah,
it's
a huge catch 22.
That's why I think it has to be two players.
I don't understand how. I mean, like I understand logistically that makes sense for the fantasy game, but in terms of attempting to emulate real life, I don't understand how that works.
No. We're going to find out next year because I 100%
you know what it should be? And, I mean, it's the fantasy version of, oh, God, I'm blanking on his name. I just had it in my head. The ambidextrous pitcher.
Pat Vendetti.
Thank you. When Vendetti pitches, he has to declare before the at-bat who he is. Is he a lefty or is he a righty? Mm-hmm. So before every game, you're going to have to declare whether he's a hitter or a pitcher.
That's fair. You can't have both, and I'd be fine with that because then his value is normalized.
Mm-hmm.
He still has huge value.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, because actually it's not because then you can still count him as a hitter 4 days, 5 days a week. But this is absolutely going to happen because he has the ability to dictate his contract terms as much as he can, and whether teams are going to promise him, he's going to the American League, I think. Which sounds odd for a guy that wants to hit, but he's going to be that good where he can be your platoon DH against righties. And
well, I mean, if he's going to the American League, he's either going to the Yankees or the Mariners.
Yep, Mariners, Texas Rangers could be possible. He cannot go to Houston because they can't, unless he wants to take $300,000, which I don't think he will. He can't go to the Cubs. He can't go to the Cardinals. He cannot go to the Padres. Cannot go to the Braves. Nationals.
Well, he can go wherever he wants because, like you said, he's going to be trying to make money based on.
Ultimately, I think he takes the just short of $15 million he would get from some of these other teams rather than the $300,000. I think that's a big difference.
For sure.
And that's what he's looking at. But I also have ways around it. Like, what's to say the Astros can't sign Ohtani, right? What's to say they sign Ohtani to a contract with a $300K bonus is per allowed, and then hire his wife to be an Asian ambassador and pay her $12 million for the franchise.
Yeah, MLB would never allow that.
And there's another thing. We read the Dave Cameron article. What if a team signs him, like the Cubs, or Astros or Nationals, one of those teams, signs him to that $300K deal, and then a month later tears it up and signs him to a 10-year extension?
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? So it's going to be crazy. It's the Wild West, essentially. And if Major League Baseball handles it like they handle the international markets in Latin America, then it's going to be a clusterfuck.
Once again, the reason why the international trade or the international signing stuff is completely ridiculous.
Needs to be a draft.
They all need to go into the same draft as first year players.
Well, or same method. There shouldn't be multiple different ways of acquiring talent.
Put them all clumped together. You become eligible for professional baseball. You go into the draft. I want to see where, you know, this
Kevin Maiton falls in relevance to Blake Rutherford in the same draft.
And you should all get paid based on that slot. Like, you shouldn't, like, you know, a guy, who was it, was Lucius Fox left the United States?
A couple players did this.
Yeah, in order to avoid being taken in the draft. Yeah.
Yep. He would have been a projected third-round pick, and third-round pick. You're looking at about $650K.
Yeah, if I had a kid, I would totally move out of the country. Just
Alex Reyes did that. Yep. Alex Reyes was born in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. Went to live with his grandparents in the Dominican Republic before his senior year. He wasn't a big prospect. He was probably on draft. He's looking at the back end of a draft as a high school pitcher. But went to the Dominican Republic, started pitching, believe it or not, and then signed for like $900K as opposed to nothing if he gets drafted. And you get to pick where you want to go, which is worth a lot in itself.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap us up for this episode. Matt, where can people reach you? What are you working on?
You can reach me, MDTompFWFB, to get my Ohtani rants and everything else. I'll be tweaking these rankings. I'm excited for these mock drafts we got coming up. It's going to be exciting to get some ADPs that we can use that are relevant. I'm sure we'll post those somewhere, right, for people to look at. And
oh yeah, I'm gonna do a huge article, probably, and I'll probably do multiple articles on him for Friends of Fantasy Benefits, but I'll do one big article or at least one or two big articles for FanGraphs.
And we'll get a Google Doc going or whatever, mm-hmm. Some sort of methods for people
for
to
sure.
see, ADPs for everybody. We're gonna have four drafts. At least, maybe more, depending on what we get. 15 teams.
Yeah, we've already got virtually three full drafts. So we've got at least 45 different industry folk in it. I'm starting to fill up a fourth one, so potentially 60 industry people doing mock drafts to kind of set some sort of early ADP.
That'd be extremely nice. So, yeah, it'll be nice to have. But, yeah, looking forward to that. Baseball's winding down, which kind of sucks. Especially as a Bears fan. always talking prospects and baseball stuff on the Twitter, probably too much, but hit me up.
You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. You can email me at friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or email the show if you've got questions for us. Please give us a rate and review. It really helps us out, especially if it's the 5-star variety. If you do that, it'll get you entered in to win some free Friends of Fantasy Benefits gear, which we'll continue to give away rest of this season and into the offseason as we start to prep for 2018. Don't go anywhere, because we are going to continue recording through the end of the year. It may not be, you know, two or three episodes a week, but you'll get at least one episode a week every week through the end of the year. In the off season, and then we come hard. If you joined us,
we always kick ass in
the
off season.
Yeah, if you joined us mid season or this year, you are in for a treat, because you will get more content than you know how to deal with. Once the season starts, we do preview pods of every single team in a separate mini pod that Matt and I do on every single minor league system. So for those. Dynasty players, deep league players, keeper league guys. We cover the minor leagues extremely in depth at the beginning of January. So make sure you stay subscribed. You continue to listen. And we're going to be doing a lot of fun things with Friends of Fantasy Benefits all off-season long, so definitely continue to check that out. You can read all my stuff on FanGraphs, where I write 4 to 5 times a week. You can read all my football stuff over on Fantasy Alarm, where I will write one gigantic, huge article once a week. and the rest of my stuff goes on FriendsOfFantasyBenefits.com. You can also hear me on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, which Matt joins me from time to time, Thursdays, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, 6 to 8 Pacific for the Tout Wars Hour. I'm sure I'm forgetting other stuff that I'm doing, but at this point I'm tired and I want the podcast to be over. So that is going to wrap us up for this episode. For Matt and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season. Fall.